The Catholic Channel, Sirius XM 129 presents Just Love, a conversation on the Church's social mission with Monsignor Kevin Sullivan.
Welcome to Just Love. I'm Monsignor Kevin Sullivan. This is our weekly conversation about the church in the world. And we just say, just love. Just do it. Just love God. Just love yourself. Just love your neighbor. And our world will be more just and more compassionate. You know, to check out what we're doing on Just Love, you can check out my blog at justloveblog.com. And remember to follow me on Twitter at MSGRKSULLIVAN, MSGRK Sullivan on Twitter. So this week, we're going to be exploring a couple of different topics. We're going to be looking at something that is a little bit unusual and incredibly innovative. We're going to be dealing with some lights that are part of helping those who are refugees in different places in some of the real dark places, which are refugees camps. And I'm delighted that in just a couple of minutes, we're going to be speaking with Alice Minsu Chung, who is the co-founder and the chief executive officer of Solite Designs, which is the company that makes these solar puffs. I think I just like the name of it because I think it's got a real nice name. And, you know, if we were on television, we could show you a demonstration of solar puff, but you're just going to have to take our word for it that these are kind of cute little things that you can make light up. And I say cute little things, but they can be terribly important because they can also really change people's lives because they create a situation in which is a lot more safe for people because there is light. Darkness can kind of cover a lot over. And, you know, even if we go back to the gospel a little bit, you know, we talk about children of the light, children of the darkness. We talk about, you know, Nicodemus came by night because it was a hidden situation. He didn't want to know that he didn't want his colleagues to know that he was approaching Jesus. So light, darkness has real, real kind of biblical and religious and spiritual themes. And it also clearly has some very, very practical implications in the real world we live in, and particularly in dangerous situations. So I'm delighted that that Alice has chosen to come into the studio and will be with in a few moments. You know, after we speak with Alice, we're going to also then speak with Donnie Hodge, who is the president of Alta Gracia Apparel. And I'm delighted that Donnie's going to be here, and I'll be able to share a little bit with you of a trip I just came back with last week in the Dominican Republic. And one of the reasons I went there was to visit the factory in Alta Gracia again that I had visited probably about 5-6 years ago, which is a what I call kind of a fair wage, fair working condition factory that Donnie Hodge is the chief executive officer of. He's the head of the company. And I was just really privileged to kind of visit there again. And this time, Donnie brought his family to work. Now, that's a little bit unusual because the factory is about a half hour out of the capital of the Dominican Republic. And Donnie's family is in the south of this country. And so it's kind of a little different than, you know, bringing your family to work when it's maybe a half hour away. This is, you know, quite a trip away. But it was a great trip, and I'm going to be looking forward to speaking with Donnie about the trip and some of those type of some of the other aspects of the trip too. You know, while we were away last week, a lot has been going on in the United States, and you know, from my point of view, I have no problems in saying not very positive, because the aftermath of Charlottesville in and of itself, or Charlottesville in and of itself, was a very, very awful, tragic situation in the United States. The aftermath of it has not been much better. And so a lot of it continues. And, you know, there's a lot of discussion going on about the issues of racism, the issues of history. And I'll kind of share a little bit about history. And I think, again, we continue to be in a very, very difficult situation as a country, a situation in which we are undisputedly divided from one another and indisputably, in my judgment, divided in a way in which we've lost a lot of respect for other people. We kind of are really, really clear to manifest our anger at other people. It seems acceptable to treat people differently, to use words and language that, you know, would never have been considered decent, but there just seems to be an impunity in our country for some of those things that are going on. And so I'll share a little bit about that as we move forward. But right now, what I want to do is I want to kind of speak with our first guest. Our first guest is Alice Min Soo Chun, who is the co-founder and chief executive officer of Solight Designs. And thank you, Alice, so much for coming into the studio here on Just Love.
It's such an honor to be here. Thank you for having me.
Great. So tell us about Solo Puffs. I like Solo Puffs. I'm telling our listeners, I got one in front of me. I press it. It's just lit up with this bright white light, and you just have to believe me that I'm telling you this. And if I press it again, I think I might get it to blink. And yep, I got it to blink now, and probably if I hold it again, I can turn it off. I did. So Alice, tell us about it. What's going on?
Okay, well, when I had my son, when he was born with asthma, I realized there were so many kids that were sick. In New York City, one out of four kids have asthma. It's 44% higher than the rest of the country. And there's a saying, a worried mom does better research than the FBI. And so I did a lot of research, and I realized that 75% of the pollution in the air comes from buildings from energy consumption. And it is basically compromising the health of our children and us and the environment. And I started to really focus on solar energy at that time. And I was teaching architecture at Columbia University when the Haiti earthquake happened. And I quickly decided to change my studio around last minute to create an innovation studio to help Haiti. And we realized through our research that 2.6 billion people in the world live without access to electricity, and they're using kerosene lanterns to light their world at night. Kerosene is a deadly, toxic fossil fuel. It kills 4 million people every year because of the fumes, 2 million of which are children. In India alone, there's 30,000 house fires every year due to kerosene lanterns. So we decided that having a flat pack solar light would enable people in regions of extreme poverty to save money because they spend up to 30% of their income on kerosene and candles. And we designed it to be extremely light and flat packable so that for emergency response, you can fit 120 in a box versus other solar lanterns that need batteries. They're big, bulky, they're ugly, they're heavy, and you can only fit 10 in a box. So we really thought about how we could deploy as many of these lights as possible for as little money as possible. We wanted to make them affordable. And these have been distributed all over the world. We're in 25 different countries. A lot of our giving, we have a nonprofit. This started through our nonprofit, but I had to start a for-profit in order to get it manufactured. And now we've impacted over 100,000 lives from Syrian refugees in Greece, Iraq, to the earthquake victims in Nepal. We have a network of volunteers through our nonprofit, Studio Unite. Our ambassador of light, her name is Allison Thompson, and she's an international humanitarian that actually puts all of our lights in big duffel bags and takes them on the plane and hand delivers them to the refugees.
We're speaking with Alice Min Soo Chung, who is the co-founder and chief executive officer of Solight Designs. And we're speaking about, so what she is describing in such elegant terms, I kind of, without saying anything, I think it's a cute box. So you can't see it in front of me, but if you kind of were to think of an accordion, okay, so you think of an accordion, which is flat, you poof it down, and then you pull it up, and voila, it creates a box. And if you press the top of the box, then there's like a little light in there so that it creates a whole lot of light.
Yeah.
Hey, Tom, turn off the lights in here, please. I want to see how bright it is.
It was actually inspired by origami. I grew up doing a lot of origami. And there's the origami balloon, which I used to do a lot with when I was a child, and also my son, who also does origami. It was inspired by the folding technology, so that our product is patented. It's the only self-inflating light. So you don't need a blowhole. There's other knockoffs out there where you need to blow it up with your mouth.
But there's a hole in this one.
Yes, but it's completely waterproof. The solar panel and the circuit are completely sealed in their own compartment. And that's funny. You're trying to blow it up.
Yeah.
But
I want to know, Alice. So listen to our listeners. Alice has set up her box, which looks absolutely wonderful and perfect. I want to know how come mine is a little crooked. What did I do wrong?
Oh, nothing. It actually looks good that way. They're meant to be playful. You can turn them into a pyramid as well because of the origami technology. There you go. That's a perfect box. But our materials are all recyclable, non-toxic, no PVC. PVC is very toxic. You can't recycle it. And all of our products are solar, recyclable, and zero carbon.
So I know that you do this. So let's talk for just a moment or two, if we could, about why these are so valuable in a refugee camp.
Well, in the darkness, first of all, we have research and data reports that when a woman is going to the bathroom at night, she's more likely to be sexually assaulted. Children in emergency situations where they've lost their parents, they're more likely to be kidnapped. And if you have light, you're able to identify the attacker. And so you're safer. They're less likely to attack. And also in Haiti, in the human settlements in the slums of Haiti after the earthquake, the day after they handed out solar lights, there was a 20% decrease in rape.
Wow. Your solar lights they handed out? Or was it another?
Yes.
Yours. So are you an architect yourself?
I am. Okay. My training is architecture. I taught architecture at Columbia University, at Parsons, the New School, at University of Pennsylvania.
So you designed these yourself?
I did. Okay. I designed them to be beautiful as well as functional.
So I'm looking at this. You know, the question I always ask is, well, how long will the lights last?
They'll last 8 to 12 hours of light on a full charge. So you just face the solar panel up to the sun. It'll charge it. No batteries needed for 5 years. You know, there's 180,000 batteries that end up in landfills every year leaking acid. And with these, no batteries needed.
And you just have to recharge.
Yeah, as long as you have sun, you can have light for 5 years.
Wow. That is really, really amazing. So how much do they cost? Can you buy them?
Well, yes, they are available in retail in the United States. People love them for camping outdoors, and children love them for nightlights, and they're waterproof, so you can put them in the pool or your bathtub. And they're the Solar Puff is retail for $30, and then we have another version called the Solar Helix, which is a twist, and it looks more like an ice cube.
Is that what you have in front of
you?
Yes. Okay.
Yes. The material is different. It's also recyclable. The Solar Puff uses a sailcloth material, which is engineered for extreme weather. It's actually produced in the United States, the sailcloth. It's normally used for big ships and boats. It's UV coated. It's high-tech fabric. I'm also a material technology teacher. I teach material technology at at Columbia University and at the New School. And the trend in materials is that everything's getting lighter, stronger, faster, and smarter. And so early on, I was sewing solar panels to fabric and thin film substrates, like thin plastics. And I shared all of that research and technology with my students when the Haiti earthquake happened. And this was one of the results from my studio.
So speaking with Alice Minsu Chung, who is the co-founder and chief executive officer of Solite Designs, and we're talking about a variety of things, but we're talking primarily about the solar puffs that she has designed, created, and now manufactured that really do a number of things. One is they are very environmentally friendly because they're powered by solar power. The other thing that they do is, in somewhat dangerous situations, they create an easy way for people to have light. So in refugee camps or in disaster situations, it's a very easy way for there to be light. And as Alice shared with us, the tragedy is that when there's darkness, there's a lot of crime, there's a lot of activity that's immoral, rapes, robberies, etc. And it's documented that when there is light, a lot of that goes down and people feel more protected. So, Alice, you told me that that my little guy here is about $30. How much is your ice cube?
That one is $22.
Ah, I would have thought that one was even more expensive.
We also have a smaller version called the Twilight, and that is $17, and that has red light, white light, and an SOS signal. So that's really good to have in your car just in case. But also, I put that on my bike at night, okay, so cars can see me at night in the city.
So you talked about, and I think this is something which certainly is very interesting to me, is sometimes there's a little bit of trade-off, I think, in our world between like doing good and profit and sustainability, yes, and things like that.
Yeah.
How do the economics of this work out?
Well, a percentage of our profits go to our nonprofit in order to get these lights to regions, right, that need it most. And here in the United States and in Europe, people have been, you know, we did a Kickstarter.
Okay.
And there was one day we made $250,000 in one day, because when people just see the light and see how it flat packs and,
right,
magically turns into a cube, everyone just loves it. And the novelty of it, they love, and they want it. So,
good.
So for us, it's you know, we've been successful. We're you know, growing and scaling, and we're actually looking for investment right now. But in the United States, we're in the market for outdoors, camping, home decor, emergency response.
So can people go into a store and just buy them?
Yes, we're selling in MoMA Design Store and Whole Foods in the picnic section. We're also in almost every gift store, museum gift store across the country. You can definitely just come to our website, solite-design.com.
Tell our listeners what's your website.
It's solite, solight-design.com. And you can order straight off of our website. And we also have a give program where if you want to donate a light, it takes you directly over to our nonprofit, and you get a tax deduction for donating a light to one of our programs. We have many programs in Sierra Leone, Ghana, Senegal, South Africa, Kenya, India.
So are you're looking to grow
Syrian
the company?
Refugees.
You're looking to grow the company.
We are, because what I've realized in my experience in Haiti is that the best way to help people create change and provide economic opportunity is to create jobs. So we are a for-purpose company, not a for-profit company, but we are in between a social good nonprofit and a for-profit. Solight Design is legally a for-profit C Corp, but our giving is directly connected to our nonprofit sister, Studio Unite. And you can go to studiounite.org to donate directly to our give program.
Okay. Well, listen, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you so much for having me. This is amazing.
Well, it is. And I'm just delighted for what you've done, your innovation here. And you know, we'll follow up and we'll try to figure out if we can kind of make some connections
so that other people can
learn about it. And also maybe there are some partners in different parts of the world.
I'd love to.
Great.
Thank you so much.
Hey, thank you so much for being with us. We've been speaking with Alice Min Su Chung, who is the co-founder and chief executive officer of Solight Designs, which is basically an environmentally friendly solar-powered little light box, which can be used decoratively, but more importantly, it can be used in some dangerous parts of the world where it provides, without needing batteries or anything like that, light in dark areas, particularly refugee camps where people may not have access to power. This provides some light for them and an added amount of safety. So I'm delighted that we were able to do that, and we're going to kind of follow up in a variety of ways. So I think we'll take a break from Just Love. Just do it. Just love God. Just love your neighbor. Just love yourself. And our world will be more just and it will be more compassionate. Now, I have to say this to one of our people who works on this for the sake of Fanny Gomez. She told me I have to now say to learn more about our guest, you can check out my blog at justloveblog.com. And you can follow me on Twitter at Monsignor K. Sullivan, MSGRKSULLIVAN. Join us when we come back in just a moment on the Catholic Channel, Sirius XM 129. Welcome back to Just Love. I'm Monsignor Kevin Sullivan. This is our weekly conversation about the church in the world. Thank you for being with us. And I have to tell you, and Fanny has told me that I have to say, to learn more about our guests, check out my blog at justloveblog.com. And also, remember to follow me on Twitter at MSGR. Kay Sullivan. You can learn more about, I guess, and some other topics that we talk about on the show, and also maybe some other topics that we don't even get around to talking about on the show. Now, last week, I was in the Dominican Republic on a very interesting trip, and we're going to speak with Donnie Hodge, who was one of my hosts on that trip. We're going to speak about his fair work and wage factory in the Dominican Republic, about a half hour outside of the capital, and what that has meant for the workers who are there. So we're going to speak about that. However, when I was away in the Dominican Republic, you just couldn't avoid a lot of the stuff that was going on in the United States, and a lot of the aftermath of the tragic, awful events in Charlottesville, which the rallies that were there, the Nazi rallies, the white supremacist rallies, just an awful, awful situation. And, you know, once more, I think there has been a lot of stuff that's been raised up about how divisive we are as a country. And that is a very difficult, difficult situation. And we're going to explore that in a little ways. And one of the things that, you know, I remind everybody that as Catholic Charities is entering into our second century, one of the things that's so critical for us is partnerships, that we work with people in various sectors, people with different ideologies. We work with people with very, very different perspectives, which one goal alone is to kind of foster the common good, to foster the dignity of individuals, to provide help to people in need, and to create hope for their lives. And to do that, we just have to reach out to a lot of different people, and together we can touch more lives. We can do it in a way which is much more effective to do that. And so we find the world that we live in is really, really threatening the mission of Catholic Charities, because we wind up in situations where people, and I'm going to say this, people hate one another. And the way they speak about each other is so disrespectful. The way they speak about each other is so derisive. They speak about each other in a way that they don't want to work with anybody. And then what happens is you get strong guilt by association. Well, if you talk to this person, well, then I want to talk to you, because if you're talking to that person, you mustn't like me. And if you talk to another person, you can't talk to somebody else. And lest one think that this is not a real, real situation, you know, some of the conversations that I overhear are just despicable. And so the real atmosphere that we're in is a real threat to Catholic Charities, is certainly a threat to our Catholic view of the world, in which we respect the dignity of every human person. We respect diversity. And so this is very, very critical. I did hear one of the other hosts on the Catholic Channel speak about, you know, one of the examples of the current situation, which somebody painted, now I didn't see this myself, so I'm relying on a report of somebody else, that there was a swastika painted on the statue of Saint Junipero Serra, who is the California missionary who a lot of missions in the West, I'm sorry, in California were founded by him as a Spanish missionary. And again, because of a lot of the talk of colonialism and some of the talk about how Christianity was disrespectful and some of the awful things that were done to Native Americans, that somebody decided that that type of activity warranted painting a swastika on his statue as somebody who was, I'm making this word up, a neo-colonialist who was oppressive of people, et cetera, et cetera. Now, you know, that got me thinking a little bit, is, and some of the other conversation about Confederate flags, about statues, and the discussion is really ramping up. And so, you know, I was thinking about this and I said, you know, I don't have any really, really rigid, firm, well-developed thoughts about this, but I kind of, you know, thought about it is I like history. I really do. I think you learn about it. And kind of every year recently, I've read at least one historical book, and it's usually a biography about a famous person. In recent years, I've read books about Cleopatra, Benjamin Franklin, and yes, I did read the biography of Hamilton in addition to seeing the play. Okay, so I at least did that part. And, you know, almost all the individuals I've read about, they're really compelling, outstanding individuals. And almost each and every one of them could be classified both as a saint and a sinner, depending on which part of her life or his life you chose to focus on. And I think as a responsible person, I have an obligation to think about what I read and see critically, assessing the times, the context, and seeing if it tells me something about the world that I'm currently living in and trying to make sense out of. And, you know, being part of a historical religion, being part of a religion that's around for 2,000 years, I know that I have to think critically about that past, the legacy, different times. And so I think I kind of do have a little bit of a nuanced understanding of history. And I do subscribe to that adage that history is written by the winners. And therefore, you got to read that critically, because those who win get to write the books and they tell it in their own particular way. So I do kind of like revisionist histories, with the understanding that the revisionist is also capable of biases, and the original theories and perspectives also have a certain bias in them. So I think whatever we read, we have to read it critically. But I have to, at least in my mind, and, you know, people might be, you know, critical of this, but while I like revisions of history, I don't like rewriting of history. Now, here's the distinction that I'm going to make. Maybe people are going to say it's a little simplistic, but, you know, somebody actually died at a particular place, at a particular time, and in a particular way. You know, they were shot, they died in bed. To me, that's a historical fact. And I really would like that to remain constant, that what happened, and we can know what happened. Now, sometimes there's ambiguity, but those are facts to me, historical facts. However, why the person died, the ramifications of that death, now that seems to me a little bit certain, less certain, and that's open to legitimate debate, interpretation, and marshaling of evidence for your own theories. So let it be. I'd like to see those interpretations continue, but I don't want to rewrite the facts of what happened in history. And now, moving on to what's currently in the news, what about those historical artifacts that are related to historical figures and events? Statues, paintings, flags, etc. You know, I don't know what the right answer is. I really don't. But as I listen to the current debate, I'm going to listen more. And I got some preliminary ideas, which I'm willing to debate. I'm willing to listen to other people. So when it comes to flags, it seems to me flags express allegiances. And so in the case of the Confederate flag, it's an allegiance to a breakaway secessionist country that was based upon an ideology that was repugnant. And so I guess I come down on the side of voting for taking down Confederate flags from places of honor. I don't mind, and I think we should keep them in our museums so that we don't forget the dangers that that symbolized. And with statues, you know, I don't know about statues, because maybe we keep statues and we don't put any laudatory phrases next to them. You know, we need public reminders, it seems to me, of the things that have gone wrong in our past, so that we warned about not letting similar things happen in the present and future. So statues, you know, I don't know. Clearly, I don't think everything gets decided on a once-for-all basis on everything. You know, like I said, I don't have a clear answer to that. I said, but there are some things I do know very clearly. I do know that if we're going to remember only those people who never sinned, who never did a single thing wrong, we're not going to have a single statue or a single repertoire. Now, I don't mean to make an equivalency of things. There are obviously people whose public lives were dedicated to things that are repugnant, that are awful. But you scratch deep enough with even the most laudatory a figure who deserves to be commemorated for so much good, you can find things that are not so laudatory about that individual. So I'm not sure. I do think, though, I really do have a problem in which we kind of want to rewrite the facts of history. I also think that we have to understand history is written by the victors. I think we need to always be open to revising our understanding of history. And I think we always have to be, say, we're not ascribing to ideologies and values that are repugnant to us. And we have to kind of figure it out as a people. We have to try to figure this out in a way that kind of helps us to understand our past in a way that guards us from repeating some of the awful errors, mistakes, sins of the past, and creating a better future. So that's where I'm at today. I share that with you. For a church that has a 2,000-year history, we have a lot that we say, mea culpa for, my fault. We have a lot to be proud of. We need to understand that history in order that we can create a better future. So my two cents on Just Love, not rigid, and I need to kind of think more and more about this. Hey, this is Just Love. Just do it. Just love God. Just love your neighbor. Just love yourself. And our world will be more just and it will be more compassionate. To learn more about us and our guests, check out my blog at justloveblog.com and follow me on Twitter at MSGRK Sullivan. Join us when we come back, and I'll speak with Donnie Hodge about my trip to the Dominican Republic and the incredible work that he's doing there. This is Just Love, the Catholic Channel, Sirius XM 129. Welcome back to Just Love. To learn more about our guests and our show, check out my blog at justloveblog.com. And remember to follow me on Twitter at MSGRK Sullivan. Just love. God, neighbor, self, and our world will be more just, and it will be more compassionate. I'm delighted now, and kind of we had a little bit of a last-minute switch, so I'm delighted that our next guest, Donnie Hodge, was able to join us today on the phone. And we're going to talk about the trip that we both were just on to the Dominican Republic. Donnie, thanks so much for being with us.
Absolutely. I appreciate very much the invitation.
Great. Before we go, I did some research for your wife. So I'm going to share something with you for your wife. Okay. So remind me about that at the end. Okay.
So
let me just, to our listeners, Donnie Hodge is the president, the CEO of Alta Gracia Apparel, which is about a decade old, maybe not quite a decade old, factory in the Dominican Republic, in which they provide decent jobs, decent work conditions, decent wages for people there. And they make a lot of apparel for college campuses and for other places. And Donnie and I were just in the Dominican Republic, and I again got to visit the factory that was there, but this time a little bit more. I'm so grateful that we got to visit the places, the houses where some of the workers live there, and to see the incredible greater dignity that they're living at because of the fair wages, fair working conditions in the factory. So Donnie, thanks again for the visit, and thanks a lot for helping me to understand a little bit better.
Absolutely, and you know, first I should say thank you for the invitation. First of all, my wife and I got to go to the orphanage and spend the day there, and it was very meaningful experience for us. And then your visit to you and Luz coming to our factory was just it was meant so much to those workers. And so after the day that we spent, so many workers have reached out to me and to tell me how much they appreciated the visit. And and I guess the odd thing about it is we really aren't doing anything special. We're simply treating people with the respect they deserve.
Well, you know, Donnie, I think I say thank you for that. But I think this is critical, and I think this is important for our listeners to understand. But you also have the reality that it costs money for product, it costs money for stuff like that. So you got to make a few kind of trade-offs and sacrifices to do the right thing, to do a business like yours, don't you?
Yeah, absolutely. Look, in the U.S., there's standards that are set sort of nationally. We have a minimum wage. We have all of these. We have OSHA standards. So the standards are set. So no matter where you go in the U.S., you may pay more or less regionally, say the Southeast versus the Northeast, et cetera. But there's these minimum standards. When you expand the scope of your production to include the world, there's standards all over the place. Most countries have a defined minimum wage, but first of all, sometimes they aren't enforced. But secondly, those wages that are set as a minimum in many, many, many instances are not enough to provide workers with housing and food and health care, the things that are just sort of basic to what we as human beings deserve. So what we did is the WRC, which is the Workers' Rights Consortium, had done very extensive studies around the world and said, what does a family of four need to meet all these basic needs? And so rather than us trying to set that standard ourselves, we simply adopted their standard. And in the case of the Dominican Republic, it's about 3.5 times the minimum wage. And you just think about that. Think about that. Based on an independent study, you really need to be paying more than 3 times the minimum wage just to provide families with basic needs. So that's what we're doing. And in addition to, you've been in our factory, we do also do a lot of things about how we treat the workers in the factory, the conditions under which they work. Those are all additional things that we do. But yes, there is an additional cost.
And that's just the reality of things. If you raise part of the equation, the cost is going to go up. And it's got to be translated, I think. I mean, I wrote about this. At least my economics say it's either got to be translated in a little bit of a haircut in the profits or a little bit of premium in what the consumers pay.
Yes, absolutely. And you know, I would say to a lot of people, what's a T-shirt worth? What is a hood worth? What is a crew, you know, a hoodie worth? So if there's a college hoodie sitting in a retail store that's $45 or $50 retail, how do we establish the intrinsic value of that? Is it worth $50 or is it worth $54? Is a consumer in the United States willing to pay, you know, $3 more, $4 more, so that the workers who made that garment are treated with respect? Oh, and by the way, that they can go home and take care of their children and their family. So this mentality of race to the bottom that we've had so much in the U.S., you know, at some point in time it has to stop. There will be a bottom, you know, and there will be collateral damage as we get to that bottom.
Well, you know,
and unfortunately, the collateral damage is people who are making the product.
Well, you know, to share with you just a little bit of my experience, it's interesting to me. This was not intentional on my part, but I actually visited about 2 or 3 years ago. I visited some of the garment workers in Bangladesh. I was invited by a labor union to go there, and I went. And what you just said is one of the reasons why that race to the bottom is why now the garment industry in Bangladesh is such a thriving industry, because it now undercuts the cost of production from China. And so now it's a growing place because it's cheaper to manufacture goods there than there is in China. So I think what you say is absolutely right. And there, I have to say, you know, one of the reasons we went was to kind of raise up a little bit of awareness. And part of the accord that has been signed there is some of the companies are at least now trying to sign on to doing better by their workers in terms of working conditions, primarily. Wages are not quite at the forefront, but safe conditions, so you don't have tragic fires and tragic building collapses. But it is a real, real challenge, I think, that race to the bottom.
Oh, it absolutely is. And you know, it's almost humorous, although it's not. I had an executive at a company tell me not long ago that Bangladesh was getting too expensive, and he's now looking in the African continent. And I'm thinking, just think about that sentence, that Bangladesh is getting too expensive in some cases to make products. So what you know, there's an ethical side to this also, Kevin.
Right.
I mean,
right.
There's an ethical side is you as human beings, as U.S. Human beings that live in USA, we have to have some level of minimum treatment of individuals. When you start losing respect for people that are providing you goods and services, it's a really dangerous place to go. I think about a lot of times, what about the people who make your clothes and do those things? What if they lived across the street from you?
Yep.
Would you have a different perspective in terms of what level of respect and treatment that you gave them? So, and the fact that they happen to live around the world doesn't mean that they deserve anything less.
Well, you know, and I think what you point out, Donnie, and I think, you know, the world has now shrunk so much, and given internet, given all of the instantaneous communications, it seems to me that there may be an opportunity for us to make some of those workers in other parts of the world seem more like our next-door neighbors than maybe it would have been, you know, 20, 30 years ago. And we have to figure out a way how we raise up the plight of those workers so that there's a greater awareness of you know, and you know, you talk about, you know, your $40-$45 shirts in college bookstores. I mean, we're talking about the $7 or $8 T-shirts that you can get online or you can get in other places that really must be being produced at a really, really low rate of pay.
You know, Kevin, a couple of things. You can go to some rather large retail chains in the U.S. today, and it amazes me that the price of cotton, raw cotton, if I go out and buy raw cotton today, I'm paying 65 cents a pound or 70 cents a pound, somewhere in that neighborhood. And yet I can go into a retailer and buy a 12-pack of men's T-shirts for under $10. So if you think about that, that's less than 90 cents a shirt, less than a dollar a shirt. And yet the raw cotton itself is, you know, 70 cents a pound. So think about the additional
cost. Tell me, how many shirts do I get out of a pound?
So in a T-shirt, a normal men's T-shirt, you would get, it would take about 0.6. So you get about 1.5 T-shirts out of a pound, roughly.
Okay.
So you can see that once you pay for the raw cotton, you aren't paying very much additional. And so I always jokingly say to people, do you really need 10 T-shirts at a time? I mean, could you really not get by buying 8 T-shirts? What do you even do when you buy that many of these little cheap T-shirts and garments like that?
So you know exactly what happens. You wind up using them for rags. You know, because you wear them once and, like, you know, who knows how long they last. So it's, but you're right. We kind of don't think about all of those things.
Well, it's just also this kind of throwaway society, conspicuous consumption that we have, and that that is as a mindset we also have to think. And I tell you, my grandchildren and children were fortunate to be able to be with you and Lou's last week, and you went out with me in the community, and I have an 8-year-old and a 6-year-old and a 3-year-old grandchild, and when I look into their eyes here in the U.S., and then I'm in the Dominican Republic in these villages, and I look at the same 3-year-old and 6-year-old and 8-year-old's eyes looking back at me, they have the same hopes, they have the same, you know, and so we just can't exploit people because they live around the world somewhere.
So Donnie, we only have a few minutes left, but share with me, what was the perspective of your grandchildren? Did they talk about the visit?
It was, Kevin, it was unbelievable, really, because I'm not a young guy, and I've had a long successful career, but I am working harder now than I have ever worked in my entire career. And my family has continued to say, you know, you're working 70-hour weeks, you're doing traveling all the time, you're working, you know, why don't you retire? Maybe it's time to let someone else, you know, have alta gracia and et cetera, et cetera. We had dinner that night after our visit to Alta Gracia. In the
did you go back through the old city?
Yeah, we did, and we had dinner.
Okay.
And so after dinner, before we left, I said to the family, my question was, "Okay, what do you guys think about Alta Gracia now? You think I should let someone else have it?" And there was this silence. And one by one, they began to say, "Gosh, Dad, I don't know. I don't know. It is making such a difference. We didn't really realize the difference it was making in these people's lives until we saw it. We didn't realize the conditions. We didn't realize what a living wage means." And it was one of the most profound experiences we as a family have had together. You know, I've been there. I go there, you know, many, many times. I'm there every other week. But it was just one of the most greatest experiences from a family standpoint that we as a family unit have ever had together.
Well, thank you for bringing them. I mean, that's a new level of bringing your family to work. I mean, that's quite a ways around. No, so here's what I got to tell your wife. So your wife asked me where Christopher Columbus was buried. And so I did a little research. And you get a pick. Either Christopher Columbus is buried in Santo Domingo or in Seville, Spain. So there are two theories about this. After he died, his body was buried in Spain. Then they shipped it to the Dominican Republic. Then when there was a war in the Dominican Republic, they shipped it back to Spain. But after it was shipped back to Spain, like a century or so later, they found a coffin in Santo Domingo, which said this was Christopher Columbus's body. So right now, both Seville, Spain, and Santo Domingo claim they have the actual body of him. So your wife can say she went to visit Christopher Columbus's grave if she's want, and there's a lot of support for it. If she doesn't want to, there's a lot of support for being in Spain. So you can tell her I did my research.
I certainly will. And I have to say this before we get off. You know, as we all make sacrifices in our travel and doing things that, you know, trying to help others, your sacrifice in getting in a small minivan that was cramped where we had suitcases on our lap with my grandchildren, including a 3-year-old, were great. Your listeners really should appreciate the sacrifice you made for that.
Well, but I got to tell you, Donnie, the one of the biggest sacrifices was kind of you trying to convince your granddaughter that a bird became a fish. That was something that I really, really had a. I thought that was, and your son was trying to figure out where that story was going.
Yeah, so was I. As I was telling it, I was trying to figure that same thing out.
Anyway, Donnie, thank you so. Hey, and we're gonna follow up to see if We at Catholic Charities here can figure out some of our sourcing of some of those type of materials that we use. So we'll follow up with you on that.
Okay, well, that's great. Thanks so much again.
Okay. Donnie Hodge, the CEO of Altagracia Apparel, which I call a fair wage product factory there. Thanks for being with us on Just Love. Just do it. Just love God. Just love your neighbor. Just love yourself. Check out our guests on my blog at justloveblog.com and follow me on Twitter at MSGRKSullivan. Thanks for being with us. This is Just Love, the Catholic Channel, SiriusXM 129.
Listening to the Catholic Channel, SiriusXM 129.